My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. And as I said before, I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group. Haven't found this to take a drink in a while, since January 25th, 1981. You know, I used to say there's old recordings that I made, you know, while I was speaking that says it was January 17th. For like about 20 years, I introduced myself January 17th because I know my last drink was on Super Bowl Sunday, 1981. So for 20 years, I said I haven't had a drink since. Because somehow, in my mind, I had looked that up, and Super Bowl Sunday was January 17th. And so for 20 years, I've been saying I haven't had a drink since January 17th, 1981. And somehow, some way, while I was on the Internet or something happened one day, I was clicking through things, and I discovered somehow that the Super Bowl was January 25th. So I had to have this large debate in my mind. I had 15 years of tapes and recordings and talk saying it was January 17th, and, you know, do I always, scratch all that, it was actually January, so I just figured I'd fess up to lying for about a week? So it's now it's January 25th, so now I'm trying to be honest, you know, and I have a lot in common with, what's your name again, the baby?
Brian.
What?
Brian.
Brian? I have.
You're my grand sponsor. Yeah, you might want to know that.
Oh, who's your sponsor? Who's
George?
George?
Yeah.
He's a good guy. George is a good guy.
He set you up to come here.
Did he get rid of his motorcycle?
No.
He still got
what
it.
What he does is going to me anyway.
You know, one day he's going to get well and get rid of that thing. But in any event, but that's great because I have a lot in common with your granddaughter. Is that your granddaughter or your? Yeah, I have a lot in common with her because
you
know.
Look too old to have a daughter.
No, because, you know, in the back of the big book, when you get to the last page, after you're following all these guys, you know what I mean? Because you figure they know what they're talking about. The last thing they say in the back of the big book, I feel the same way. The last thing they say is they say, we know but a little. You know that? They say, that's what they say. They say, we know but a little. You're reading this book in order to save your life because you're going down the tubes. And the last thing they say after everything, after the chapter to the agnostic and after everything, they say this. They say, we know but a little. And then they go on to say the same thing they've been saying for the last 164 pages before that, just another way. So your real reliance has to be on God. They've been saying that from the first page, from the forward, to the last page. But believe it or not, the way the alcoholic mind works, many, many people will come into AA and not understand that's what they're saying. They'll think it's some sort of psychological program. They'll think that if they some sort of ace the steps, or this time I'm going to do a perfect fourth step, or this time I'm going to really, like, they'll think the steps are the answer, all these, and they will drink again. Or they'll be 20 years sober, and I sponsor a lot of these guys that have long-time sobriety, and they'll be living lives of quiet desperation anyway. They won't be happy with their sobriety. In the big book, one of the things it says in Vision for You, it says, once in a while, here and there, a person who stops drinking, you think they're talking about a newcomer, but not necessarily, says, I feel better, you know, act better, I'm having a better time, you know, I don't miss it at all. It says, we laugh at such Sally. We know he'll try the old game again because he's not happy with his sobriety. Because he's not happy with, soon he'll know loneliness as few do. You know, in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, besides talking about not drinking, if you want to join the not drinking club, it says somewhere in the book, in the very beginning, it says, we've experienced much of heaven. I want you to listen. It says, we've experienced much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Does anybody have a big book around here? Is there one here I can? Oh, here's one. Right in front of me. Oh, I got one right here. I want to get this right. You know, I think the truth is very important. Truth is very powerful. I spoke to it 21 years ago. I 12-stepped a guy, a friend of mine. His name was Richard. And, you know, it's funny, I'll tell you, I do these every 3 months. After this, on January 10th, I'm going to the Little River Room, and then there's another one after that. And I try to do only one at a time. But one of the reasons I said I would do, and I'm so happy to be at this room, is because I live like about 5 blocks down the street. So, you know, because I'm always used to driving up to Palm Beach, you know, or Monroe County or the Chabad. Yeah, like I'm driving 50 miles to do these meetings, you know. So I said, man, this is right next to my house. And this happens to be the weekend that I'm staying on 14th Street and Ocean Drive. Drove all the way out here to get here, you know. But I was on 14th Street and Ocean Drive, you know, and, you know, about three times a year my wife goes down. It makes us feel like we're on a vacation or something. And they have a meeting on the beach, right on the sand. I'm right. I walk out my door and I walk onto the sand on the beach, and at 7 o'clock in the morning they have a meeting. So I went to that meeting because I have a couple of sponsees there that invited me, and I went to the meeting, and so I'm sitting there on the sand and realizing how grateful I am for whoever it is who invented chairs. I can tell you this, the guy who invented chairs was old and fat, you know. And I could see all these people, young, I say young, anybody under the age of 50, and they're sitting there, they're having a good old time, they're all thin, and, you know, the South Beach crowd, you know, and they're all models and stuff. But I'm sitting there, and the guy I 12-stepped 21 years ago was there. And he came up to me, of course, he hugged me after me, we went out to breakfast with a bunch of other guys and everything, and because I said to him, I said, when was it, how long ago was that? He says, 21 years, and he just came in 6 months ago. He never forgot, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's like the Bible says, what Jesus said. He said, my word will not come back void. He says, the truth will not come back void. You lay the truth out. They may not get it. They may run away. They may get mad. But for those that are not so mentally defective and so out of it that they want to turn their back, it will have an effect. Has anybody ever seen the movie Flight?
Yes.
If you haven't seen it, you need to go see that movie. You know in the movie Flight, when he was sitting, and I'm sorry if you haven't seen it, but I just want to point this out. You got to see this movie because it's the truth. When he's in the AA meeting, and the guy is talking about lying, living your life of lies, and he had to leave. He didn't stop drinking, but he couldn't stay in the meeting. He was so uncomfortable, he had to leave. And then we know what happens later on. The truth will not come back void. The truth will work on. It may take 21 years to work on you. It may take 21 days, 21 months. But the truth in this world will whittle you down until it works on you. And you repent. And you come alive and you come around. And you come wanting to have this deal. Because you know something? There's no person I know on the planet Earth that can give you desire. You know, I've spoken to them all, whichever way you can. I've done, for 8 years, I was on the relay here. If you called up on Friday nights between 11 o'clock and 8 in the morning, you spoke to me. You know, I've sponsored, literally, and I'm not saying this, I'm just reporting probably thousands of guys, you know, over 31 years. You know, and, you know, I get a lot of guys asking me to, now, you understand when I say sponsor, I get guys asking me to sponsor them all the time. I get one phone call and I meet him one time, and that's the end of that. But you know, well, it's true because you know it's like, you know, like they say in AA, when all said and done, there'll be a lot more said than done. You know, and many are called, but few are chosen. But the truth is that you no matter how good a talk you are, you know, a guy said to me at breakfast this morning, a grand sponsee, he said, you know, a guy called me up and he slipped again. He said, you know, I slipped. And he told me what the guy said. And he said, and I said this. And this is a guy with a lot of time. He says, I said this. Sort of checking whether he said the right thing, you know. And he says, I told him this. And I said, he says, what do you think? And I said, what does it matter? I mean, really, what does it matter? I said, listen, if he desires this deal, there's nothing you can say that's wrong. And if he doesn't desire this deal, there's nothing you could say. You're not going to talk him into this thing. Or even if you talk him into this thing so that he comes, you're just talking him in temporarily because he's leaving. You know, he's been here before. It's like, would he go to another treatment program? Yet another treatment program? Because they're going to teach you like a different set of steps. You know, they're going to tell you, no, you can drink one day at a time. I mean, you know, you think more knowledge? Well, more knowledge? You mean like my fourth treatment program will give you even more knowledge? You know, and the bottom line is it's a mysterious thing. You know, we know but a little, you know, and I for years and years, after sponsoring many, many people and having some people slip and some people slide and go, and I don't take any credit for anybody's sobriety. I don't take any any credit feel, you know, it's not my fault if somebody, I can't keep them sober. It's not me because they're sober. You always go through your mind, what did I say or what did I do or what can I say or what can I do or did I say it right or did I say it wrong or maybe if this or maybe if that. You always, it's only natural. And if you don't get over that, they're going to put you an Al-Anon. Right, Don? They'll put you an Al-Anon. That's why, you know, it's good to see Don here and my other buddy out there, my, you know, my Al-Anon people, because they have a whole organization of millions of men and women, and their only problem is they can't figure us out, you know, and they know a few of us, you know, and they ruins and it we've ruined their lives because we're breathing, you know, and just driving them nuts, you know what I'm talking about, and you don't want to get that, you know, you can actually, you know, I love Al-Anon, I really do, you know, as you, Don, you know my wife, she's the queen, you know, Al-Anon. She's in charge of making those voodoo dolls that you stick to. Our ladies of perpetual revenge, I call them. She does the greatest Al-Anon 10th step. When I'm wrong, she promptly admits it. So I'm off the subject as usual. So it says, but here's what it actually says in the book, so I don't get this thing wrong. It says this. It says somewhere in here, and I guess it's in there as a solution. And so, so this is really the truth. The big book's the truth. So, you know, all I do is I read stuff from the big book. Every step series I do, all I do is 90% of my stuff I read from the big book. So if they got a problem with what I'm saying, the problem really is they think it's with me. It's not with me. It's with this book. It's with this deal. But you know what they say, the spiritual accident is whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So if I say something to disturb you, you ought to pay me $10 as a co-payment because I've just given you a spiritual MRI. Because I've just hit something. I've just hit a button in you that's giving you problems, and you could either get mad about that, or you can get angry about that, or you can keep on thinking, because I know what alcoholics do. You'll turn it over in your head. It won't bother me. I'll even if I'm wrong, I'll get in my car, I'll drive away, and I'll probably say, why did I say that? I changed my mind. But it'll bother you, you know what I mean, for weeks until you somehow pray over it, inventory it, talk to your sponsor about it, and figure out why is it I don't like that guy. It's the way, you know, he's like me. You know, and then one day, maybe you'll find out something about yourself. Because I don't like it because of this. And you'll figure out why you don't like it. And as soon as you figure out why you don't like it, and it'll seep in, it'll go from your head to your heart, you'll understand that that's why I didn't like my father. That's why I didn't like that teacher. That's why I didn't like that guy. And all of a sudden, you'll come up to me 5 years from now and say, you know, I used to hate you, but now I love you. You know what I mean? And it will have nothing to do with me. It'll be something that changes in you. And as it changes in you, the thing that you don't like about me or what I said about you, you'll find that there'll be a whole huge group of people on the planet Earth that have been bothering the crap out of you that don't bother you anymore. Because that thing that has been broken in you that doesn't allow you to spiritually accept other people has been mended and fixed out of resentment that you turned into something good and healed it because you focused on the Lord, you focused on God, instead of feeling sorry for yourself. Whatever that means. I don't even know. You know, that's like a riff. In music, that'd be a riff. Every once in a while, the Alzheimer leaves, the Holy Spirit comes in, and I say something that makes sense. So we pray for those moments. So in any event, let's see what the deal is. So this is the truth. So if you take this book, it says this is the only thing we agree. This happens to be our basic text. This is our basic text. So I, in an AA meeting where they've asked me to do a step series, I feel perfectly at ease saying this is our text. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to debate you about this. This is the deal, okay? You don't like it, don't take it up with me. You need to write New York and tell them to rip out that page. You know, where they say there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now, you need to have him rip out that page if you don't like that. Where it says the A, B's, and C's, you can't manage your own life, another person can't do it, only God couldn't. If that bothers you, you need to have him rip out that page. If the part in the big book, you know, I'm going to tell you this. You may think this is like a giant 12-week third step meeting because all I'm going to talk about is God and your relationship with God because that's the only thing that's important. And if you don't think that's right, then what you need to do is you may need to tell them to go on page 29 where it says, further on, clear-cut directions are given, shown how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual, and talking about what an AA story is all about, what testimony is all about, each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language, which is what I'm doing. And from my own point of view, from his own point of view, the way he established his relationship with God, and that's the only thing an AA talk is about or should ever be about, You know, it's nice to have drunkologues. It's all nice to go to the banquets and laugh and cajole and all that sort of stuff. It's good to laugh. It's good to have humor. But if in an AA talk, it's not talking about God and how he healed your life and how he can heal your life, it's not a valid AA talk as far as I'm concerned. Because in AA, it says you talk about how you establish a relationship with God. And the only reason it's not talked about more in Alcoholics Anonymous, even though it's the truth, is because people are scared to talk about it because they're scared of other people's judgment, which is another problem, which is indicative of alcoholics who think that they're pieces of shit, no matter what they say to you. They may say, I don't give a shit what other people think about me. I don't care what other people think about me. But trust me, every alcoholic on the planet, the only thing they think about is how am I going to look? How am I going to feel? Who's going to be at that party? Who did you invite? You know, what did I say? You know, why did I say it? What do they think about me? Because I'm saying, all they do is think about other people. Because people that really don't care about what other people think about them don't say, even to themselves, I don't care what other people think about me. They say things like, pass the salt, or I'll have some more ketchup. But they don't say that stuff. You understand? And that's why when people come out of treatment, the most intelligent people in the world who have been told that they're going to drop dead if they drink again, they're going to flush their family down the toilet if they're going to drink again. That's why people come out of treatment, one of the first things they say to their sponsor is, if somebody, after a 28-day treatment program, after 4 months, one of the first things every alcoholic says to somebody is, if somebody asks me whether I want to drink, what do I say? Because they're so brilliant, they can't figure out the words, no, thank you. And so, therefore, if you understand a little bit about the alcoholics, you can understand what that means in alcoholic code. Because when an alcoholic says something that should be obvious, if somebody asks me, have a drink, what do I say? What you should understand, if you know about alcoholics, you know what they're really saying. What they're saying is this, you know, Carl Menninger wrote a book in 1938 or 37 called Man Against Himself. And he had a whole chapter on alcoholics. And what he said about them, he says, alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. They're out because sobriety is so painful and they hate themselves so much. That's why it says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. They drink for the effect because they're restless, irritable, discontent. You can lay a whole little bunch of layers and adjectives on that thing while they're sober. That's how alcoholics feel sober. They feel ill at ease. They feel less than. They don't feel good enough. It doesn't matter how many degrees you have or anything like that. And so when an alcoholic says, what do I say? What he's really saying to you is this. He says, look, I'm always worried about what I look like. I'm always worried about whether I'm not only an alcoholic. If you're an alcoholic, you're a please love me a holic. Don't reject me a holic. Don't talk about me behind my back a holic. Don't humiliate me a holic. You know, don't laugh at me a holic. You're all those holic things. Please accept me a holic. You're all that. You got all that stuff. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, they talk about the old ideas. You know, what do they say? They say selfishness, self-centeredness. That's the root of our trouble, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step in 100 forms. That means if you've got 10 of them nailed, and you suspect another 10, so you got 20, and you're starting to nail those, that means you only got 80 to go that you don't even know of. And you're trying to figure why people drink again? You kidding me? This is a serious deal. And so the bottom line is, so what they're saying is they're saying, I feel so crappy about myself. I don't even realize how crappy I feel about myself. I don't even realize how I spend my whole life trying to get a car, trying to get a job, trying not to lose this, trying to get that, so other people will accept me and I'll look good. Because if they think I'm good, then I'll perhaps feel I'm good. Because if they think I'm bad, then I won't feel I'm bad, which is why women need relationships and men need this. I need a man. I need a woman. I need all that. I have to have that blouse. I have to have bigger breasts, whatever it is. Get the Viagra, whatever it is. We live in a country where somehow we've been sold. It's all on TV now. It would be funny if it wasn't true that your life will be fantastic if you can keep a heart on for 4 hours, you know what I mean? Or if you can have bigger breasts or you can lose 15 pounds and everything like that. None of it works. Not the money works, none of it works, which is why Bill Wilson said, worldly clamors got me back to drink, looking at things of the world, because this world is not designed to help you in your sobriety or help you with your walk in God. It's designed to tear you down. Everything in this world, every billboard, every TV set is basically a mirror telling you you are insufficient and not good enough because you don't look like Brad Pitt. And if only you looked like Brad Pitt or this guy or that guy or Angelina Jolie or whatever it is, your life would be okay, and they're not even okay. I'm not talking about them personally. That's why you see all these movie stars doing great. But we chase it, and it's our DNA, and we go up to our sponsors and talk about how we don't have this, and we don't have that, and we're scared to lose this. And they say things like, what are you worried about this? Look at this. And so we say, what are you, crazy? Because our alcoholic thinking seems the only normal thinking. Our alcoholic life seems the only the normal life. And to us, it makes absolute sense that if we had things or stuff or things like that, the stuff we chased before we came in here, we'd be okay. And you can lose the drinking, but it's very hard to stop being addicted to the things of these world, which you think is so important because the world celebrates it. And this world, it's like, remember that song, I Fought the Law and the Law Won? Mm-hmm. I fought the world and the world won. And the world is more powerful than anything you could possibly imagine. It's more powerful than me. It's more powerful than Barack Obama. You know, the president, most powerful man in the world. It's more powerful than him. It's more powerful than any, it's more power than the Congress of the United States. It's more powerful than, no matter how powerful you think you are, you ain't going to stop what happened in Connecticut. You ain't going to stop people dying of cancer. And I'm like an ant on a log rolling down the river. You know, every once in a while the log comes to a bend of the river, I think I'm steering the flipping log, you know? You know, pretty much I can change my position on the log a millimeter here, a millimeter there, in order to get maybe less wet. But the log's going where the log is going. And unless I somehow take my eyes off the river and eyes off the log and put my eyes on God, I ain't going to survive this deal because I'm not powerful enough to do that situation. So I'm basically saying, and I don't even realize I'm saying because I'm not even bright enough to even accept this part, I'm saying to you that I feel so crappy about myself. Now, I know the answer is no, thank you. But you got to understand about my life. I need to have people love me and respect me. I don't want people laughing at me because the most horrible thing in the world to me is if people laugh at me or don't respect me. My whole life has been about running around trying to figure out how to make myself into something that people will like. And if you can't give me a story that I can't tell that guy as to why I'm not drinking with them, or why I'm not doing or smoking or dope with them, or why I'm not doing the stuff they're doing, if you can't give me a story that they'll buy into, then I'm going to have to drink. Because I would rather drink and destroy my life and flush my family down the tubes than risk the possibility that they might not like me. Because that's how much it means to me. See, my own life is bullshit, is nothing, because I'm a nothing. I've always been a nothing. I'm never going to be anything but a nothing. I used to put something in my body, it turned me into an almost. When you're a nothing, almost is top of the world. And so the bottom line is, give me that magic deal so they'll accept me even if I don't drink, because if you can't give me that, I'm drinking. I'm going to be doing what the crowd's doing because I'm a follower. I'm not a leader. And that's shit that you got going on in you if you're an alcoholic, and it has nothing to do with drinking, but it has everything to do with drinking. But you see, they don't arrest you for that. They don't stop your car and say, Mr. Spatz, would you get out of your car because we noticed, I think, you're driving while lusting. You know, you're driving while feeling, I think you're driving while feeling sorry for yourself. You're driving while covered. You're driving while thinking bad thoughts about yourself and other people. You know, they don't arrest you for that. You can actually hold on to a job. You can have children. You can raise them. You can do a lot of stuff and have all that stuff going on you and even not drink and be 20 years sober and put a gun to your head and blow your brains out and somehow feel it on your deathbed feeling, what was that all about? You know, I think I missed something. You know, is there a better way? Is there another way? You know, 2,000 years ago, this we're going to get into the history of this. But this entire book we read, the big book, is based upon the Bible. I'll go into that another deal. But it is based on 2,000 years ago. You know, one of the carpenter said, he said, in this world you'll have problems, but be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. You can be in the world, but not of the world. So I'm sitting at a meeting when I'm 3 months sober. And my sponsor took me to a meeting called the keynote meeting. And 8:30 meeting, there's a guy speaking. His name is Al Kennedy. And, you know, experience is so important. You know, I'm like anybody else. I did very well in school. One thing I did well in school, and, you know, if you study real hard, you get A's, and I got A's, and I got all this stuff, and I graduated law school, got Department of Law and Mathematics. And, you know, my whole thing is I worship my brain. like all alcoholics, I don't care whether you did well in school, we all figure we're smarter than everybody, especially when it comes to us. So it's very hard, it's not very hard not to even get to the point where you say, well, maybe I'm not that bright, maybe my best thing got me in here, maybe I ought to listen to other people, maybe he's got a point, you know. It's very hard for an alcoholic to do that. So, you know, I had this, I remember I brought my first sponsor into my office. You know, they're always good sponsors, the sponsors I needed always sort of were hitting me in the solar plexus, you know, so because I needed my ego punctured a lot. And I showed them all my degrees. If you come to my office, I got about 20, 30 degrees on my wall of fame or something like that. So I said, Bob, these are all my degrees. He says, you know, and he never even graduated sixth grade. I was terribly I should have been sponsored by, you know, Albert Einstein or something like that. Jesus, they weren't around. So, you know, I said, look at all my degrees, Bob. And he looks at me and he says, well, you know, Russ, rectal thermometers have degrees, and you know what they do with those. They never gave me a shot, you know. But so I'm at this meeting, and this guy, Al Kennedy, is sharing. I'm 3 months sober. And he's the guy who used to own Banner Tire, Kennedy Banner Tire. His kids are doing it now. And I guess he had about 30-something years at the time, and he was doing a talk, doing the steps, doing whatever, the kind of thing I'm trying to do now. And he was, like, amazing. You know, I sat there. I was one of these guys. I was, like, in the front row. I was, like, right where Clark is. I'm looking at this guy. He's talking. I'm not even sure I'm hearing what he's saying. I'm just so amazed at the way he's saying, you know, because he looked, you know, this guy looked like he had it all together. He was comfortable in his own skin. You know, he was obviously had some sort of comfortability with himself, but he wasn't, like, arrogant, you know. But he was, you know, he was kind, but he wasn't weak. He didn't appear to be weak. He was, like, helping other people. He was, had his shit together. You know, all, you know, as a man, I don't know anything about women, but as a man, you're always worried about, you know, what does it mean to be a man? You know, I want to be a man, you know, be manly. What does it mean? Does it mean to get laid a lot? Do you win fights? What is it? I had no idea. I wasn't properly fathered or whatever that deal is, so I don't know what it means to be a man. The only thing I knew was I wasn't one, but I was going to make sure nobody found that out, you know, and I was always worried they were going to find that deal out, you know, that I didn't meet the, whatever the qualifications are for manhood, I didn't really meet it, you know, but I wanted to, you know, I was trying hard. And it was clear to me, I recognized the genuine article, that I was in front of a man there. It was like one of these things, you know, sponsors, one of the great things about good sponsors, you know, that are in touch with, you know, the deal is they seem so steady. You know, I was thinking about my sponsors this morning, you know, they just seem steady. And they really are representatives, if the Holy Spirit is talking through them, of God on the planet. You know, and you know, a good sponsor will always point you towards God. You know what I mean? Because he knows that, you know, just like Bob died of cancer, you know, a good sponsor will always point you towards God, because he knows at 3 o'clock in the morning one day he won't be there. And until he links you up to that thing, will never leave you. But the one great thing that hungers me for a good sponsor is to have somebody, it seemed that no matter what was going on in my life, no matter how crazy it is, I could always call Bob and he'd be steady. I could always call Joe Snyder, he'd be steady. And they always hung out with steady people. And I'm not used to steady. I'm an alcoholic, came from an alcohol home. I'm used to craziness. I'm used to one day you like me, the next day you're committing suicide. One day you're up, one day you're down, one day you're mad. I'm not used to steady. And that's what AA rooms are all about. So also, they're steady. People come, people go. Some people are in fear, but, you know, in AA meetings, there's always somebody in fear, but at least we're not all in fear at the same time on the same meeting, you know, and, well, some meetings, but once in a while. God, whoever invented this, anybody's got a burning desire for it. But in any event, that's exactly what I want to hear at the end of a meeting, you know? But the thing is, it's a matter of being staying. You know, I now look back, you know, on my sponsors who had 25, 30 years, and they had money problems. They have every problem that I have, that you have, that anybody could have. They had that problem. But somehow they were steady. You know, that's the way they are. And so, you know, I'm sitting there in that room, and and this guy's talking, this Al Kennedy guy's talking, and he leaves the room, he finishes the meeting, you know, and walks out the door, and this is, I'm talking about something that happened 30 years ago. I remember it like it was yesterday. I turned to my sponsor, and I said, man, that guy was, you know, it's the kind of thing that you meet somebody and you say, if I can only hang out with that guy, if I can only hang out with him, like maybe have coffee with him. Just be hang around him, you know what I mean? And, just check in, you know, every once in a while. Just, you know, hear what he has to say. I, you know, it's funny, when I first came to AA, And this wasn't a way of getting out of the steps. This is something I sort of thought up. I don't know where. I said, "This, if I can hang out with guys like that through osmosis, I would sort of get this." You know, I heard a guy say, it says, the man or woman you'll be in the next 5 years will depend on the people you hang out with and the books you read. And the truth is, what I found is the books I read depend upon who I hang out with. It really does. So hanging out with people really has to. So I thought, if I could just hang out with certain people, I would, it would like come upon me. You know what I mean? And then I found out, because I'm a lazy son of a gun, that you actually have to do work. You have to do the steps, and they're important and everything. So I did those. But now after 30 years, 31 years, I really do actually believe that it really is who you hang out with. You can tell everything about a person by who he hangs out with and who he doesn't hang out with. Because if you hang out with the right people, you will eventually do the steps. You will do what has to be done. Because our desire to, the thing that used to kill us, our desire to prostitute ourselves, to do anything, to fit in, because we want people like us, that thing that used to kill us will actually help us, because we'll want to fit in with our sponsor or the winners. And we'll end up doing this stuff because we want them to like us. We want them, we want to be like them. So it really is that deal. So I'm sitting there and I'm talking to my sponsor. I said, look at that guy, you know, man, that guy was great. I really liked him. And he turns to me and he says this, imagine this if you can. Because you can't make this stuff up. I mean, you guys aren't paying me enough. It's not, you're not paying me anything. You're not to make this stuff up. He turns to me and he says to me, now imagine this. I'm an alcoholic. I'm 3 months sober. Every other word about my mouth is, you don't understand. If only. I'm an if only, or I'm a yes butter. I'm a you don't understand. I'm worried about this. I'm worried about that. If I have a hangnail, that's good for 15 meetings and a banana. You know what I mean? I'm going nuts. Everything is driving me crazy. I got a resentment. I got a mind that's going so fast. There's no such thing as, there's not even a gap between thoughts. I got 15 thoughts going at the same time, followed by another 30 thoughts, you know, and they're all bad thoughts about me and other people, you know, and I'm like nuts, and it's all about what's going to happen to me, what am I going to lose, what's going to happen in the future. It's about stuff that has nothing to even to do with me, you know, and I can't stop my brain from moving. Every once in a while I go to an AA meeting, for the first 15 minutes I'm going nuts, you know what I mean? Then all of a sudden I start calming down, I start listening to what's going on, all of a sudden I feel good for a nanosecond, and then it's out to the flipping world again, you know what I mean? And it's just getting me through one day at a time. And I turned to my sponsor because I'm mesmerized by this guy, because he was good, and I felt calm just being around him. I said, that guy's great, and he says this. Imagine this, he says, you know, he's dying of cancer. And I looked at him, I said, no, I'm talking about the guy who just did the meeting. He says, yeah, okay, he's dying of cancer. I said, the guy who just did the meeting, this guy, he did the meeting. He said, yeah, he's dying. He's got 3 months to live. I said, what do you mean he's dying? Because he didn't say anything about dying. He didn't talk about it. I mean, you know, if I was dying of cancer, I'd try to slip it in, you know. Oh, it's good to be at the Triangle Club. It's good to be here, you know. Listen, even dying of cancer doesn't stop me from coming here, because that's the kind of guy I am, you know. So don't worry about it. But he didn't even say it. He says, I know. He says, he didn't even look, you know, he didn't even act, you know. He says, I know. And, you know, that what that did, you know, it says, if, you remember that thing? It says, if you want what we have. What does it say? It's if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. You see, there's a pre-step to the first step. And the pre-step to the first step, if you think about it, as it says, is you got to have a we. You got to have somebody, something in front of you that you say, I want that more than I want to drink. I want that more than I want to get laid. Let me tell you something. If you don't want that more than you want to get laid, you're going to have big trouble in this program. You're going to go out. And you're going to go out because underneath every skirt is a slip, guys. And the same thing for girls, okay? You know, you're going to go out. You know what I mean? And the bottom line, unless you want this more than anything else, in order to want it, you got to have a we. If you want what we have, you got to somehow develop a we. A person or a group of people. You know, we say in the book, don't put people on pedestals. And there's a reason for that. You know, nobody's, you do damage to them. But the truth is, don't kid yourself. This is a program of people following people and looking up to people. And anybody who's done this to people knows that's the truth. You know what I mean? And you may fall, but it's all about, you know, following in somebody else's footstep, passing down a message. And he said that to me, but you know what, that guy became part of my we. Bob Sullivan was part of my we, you know, Joe Snyder was probably part of that deal that I had no idea what they had or had that had it or what it was all about or how you even get it, but I knew I wanted it more than anything else, and that's what will keep you coming to the AA meetings. That's what will keep you going to a step meeting or following some guy around, or doing this or doing that, when other people are like clubbing. You know what I mean? Now here's the interesting thing. That story had such an effect on me. That had him telling me that man was dying, and yet he was there and he did that thing, because I couldn't even wrap my brain about that. Can you wrap your brain around that? Can you wrap your brain? You know, many years later, I had to deal with that kind of stuff. And I've had to deal with that kind of stuff, but in many different ways. But I couldn't wrap my brain about having cancer and yet going to AA meetings and doing, I couldn't even understand how a person could do that, you know? But here's the interesting thing. That statement that he said to me, he's dying of cancer, counterpointing that meeting, probably meant more to me and changed my life more in that one instant than the guy's entire talk. I don't know if that makes any sense to you. You know, just like maybe for some of you, that my relating that story, because it puts you there, this is my story, might change your life more than whatever the hell else I said here. You know what I mean? Because it's a true story. And you know what's incredible? I'm absolutely certain, knowing how AA works, that there were 40 other people in that room, and probably, and there may have been like 35 that didn't even know that. I mean, that story, I'm not going to be egocentric, but I think that story, that was for me. That's my story. That's not even the story of the other people in the room. I'm sure there were people probably outside, you know, smoking and joking while he was talking. There were people that got out of there and said, yeah, he's good, that was good, amen. They never heard that. They never heard that story. And they were there, and they didn't even know that story. You know? And some people, even if they knew that story, wouldn't even mean anything to them. And that story, like, changed my life. I still remember it today like it was yesterday. Now, how does that stuff happen? How do you manufacture? How do you do that deal? How do I teach you that deal? All I can do is testify to it. And so it says right here in the book, it says this. It says, we have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Now, let me tell you, this is just my opinion, you know. I think they're talking about something other than not drinking. What do you think? I mean, not drinking, I hang around, you know, most people in AA, as a matter of fact, most of the meetings I go to, I don't see anybody with a drinking problem. I don't think you guys have a drinking problem. Most people are not drinking. Most people are not drinking and crazy. And thumb-sucking crybabies. You know, when I came to AA, I joined the initial fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship of the thumb-sucking crybabies. You know, we come in here unemployable. You know, 3 months later, we're underpaid. You know, the damn boss, you know, who does he think he is? I can run this place. They should make me president, you know. We come in here, I can't get a job, you know, I'm shitting in my pants. You know, who's going to hire me? And we get a job, and then 3 months later, you know, I should be running this outfit, you know. They're taking advantage of me, you know. So, the bottom line is not drinking doesn't guarantee at all that you're going to feel good about yourself. As a matter of fact, not drinking may guarantee that you're going to go down the tubes. Yeah. Because we drink because we like the effect produced by alcohol. Drinking, I'm an alcoholic, is because no amount of money, no suit of clothes, no woman, no car, no nothing worked quite as well as just a few drinks. And that's why I drank it. Because it worked that well. If alcohol did for you what it did for me, you drink it too. And if alcohol still worked for me the way it worked for me, you know, I'd probably still be drinking it. But the sad part about my life is alcohol doesn't work for me anymore. And the sadder part about my life is it stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me. And I heard a lot of people, you know. But the bottom line is, if that's true, if we drank alcohol because we couldn't stand sobriety, you know, most people, I was a bar drinker, so I drank with hundreds of people. I drank with bars of people. When I heard that line, fear of people, and fear of people, what do you mean fear of people? I love people. I love parties. He says, well, then why'd you always have to be drunk when you're around them? I love girls. I'm attracted to girls. Then why'd you always have to be drunk when you took them to bed or you were going out? Why did you always have to be drinking? You know, if you weren't scared shitless of them, asking a girl to dance or going out with her or anything like that, why did you always have to drink when you're around people? What's with the statement when you say you're invited to a party and you say, who's going to be there? Why? You know, if so-and-so's there, I can't go. All over your brain. Marlon Brando said, if I'm at a party and there's 300 people and one doesn't like me, I got to leave. You know, I gotta leave. I gotta leave the party. I gotta leave. How many people on this planet do things, go places, you know, basically run their lives because they're scared of other people and other places and things, and not even know it? They just say, "I don't feel like going there." But they don't realize behind not going there is that person, place, or thing that they're scared of running into, and they don't think, they don't even think that fear is running their lives. I have guys that come into my office and they tell me, "I'm worried about this. I'm worried about that. I'm worried about this. I'm worried about that. I don't know what I'm going to do about this. I'm worried about this. What should I do?" And I say, "Well, obviously your problem is fear." He says, "No, I'm not scared." I mean, that's how much denial we're in, that men are in. You know, they're so, they can't even admit that they're scared or they're afraid. They say things like, "I'm worried." Like, we're, you know, I had a gal, we were talking about alcohol the other day. You know, alcoholism. He says, "Well, I only drink, you know, the old, I only drink wine. I don't really drink alcohol. I only drink wine." You know that old saying? He says, "Well, I don't drink hard stuff. I only drink wine." You have to spend 18 years in a banana telling them that wine is alcohol, you know? You know, how much longer do you have to spend time telling people worry is fear? You know? Concern is fear. It's all fear. So it says, the great fact, we have found much of heaven. I'm going to close up in a second or two. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. They're not talking about just not drinking. You know, not drinking, you know, if you have to drink in order not to blow your brains out, in order to associate with people, in order to just live on the planet so you don't feel like a piece of crap, then what makes an alcoholic think that stopping putting the substance in their body that is stopping them from blowing their brains out is going to somehow, all of a sudden, they're going to feel better? Because the crap is, the alcoholism is still there. You know, because alcohol is just a symptom. The drinking of alcohol is just a symptom of telling you that if this guy needs to drink, it's because he's got alcoholism because he feels so crappy about himself. So if you stop drinking, if you stop getting the anesthetic because you got to do that because it's not working anymore, what do you do now? Well, sure, for the first 2 weeks, the first month, all of a sudden you got cash in your pocket, you feel a little better, you're not going to jail. But what do you do in the third month? When the zombies start coming, you know, and everybody starts looking shitty, you know what I mean? And the walls start closing in, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and they're all worthless pieces of crap, and you can't talk to anybody because nobody will understand because they don't know what you've been through, and it's all a bunch of crap, and it's not true. What do you do with that stuff? You know, what are you going to do with that deal, that alcoholism stuff? The great fact, so this is what they say. They say, we have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less. You know, alcoholics are running around looking for the answer. The answer is all over the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They say the great fact is just this and nothing less. You know what they do better with alcohol? You know the problem with alcoholics is they give it to them on a silver platter. They ought to say the great fact is this and then just rip that part out. And make you have to stay sober for 20 years in order to learn what it is, what the secret is, you know? You know, and say, you know, great. I go around to every AA book and says, the great fact is this is nothing less. I take that part out, and then people say, what's the great fact? I say, I can't tell you, you got up 20 years. Can't tell you. You know, I know alcoholics. There would be guys trying to, you know, make believe they had 20 years. There'd be, you'd see a couple guys look like they have 20 years, and they'd sort of sashay up to the table and sit at the table and say, hey, hey guys, how are you doing? Hey, how about that great fact thing? You know what I mean? Yeah, but you know, they know. It's so obvious you don't have the 20 because people have 20 years don't even talk about great because they know it, you know. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today, I want you to listen to, see what happens with alcoholics, and I'm going to go into this next week, is they read it, but they don't read it. You see, they read the big book. They get to the very end. They read all this stuff in flowery language. It sounds good. Makes them feel they read. They can say, I read the big book. And when you ask them what it's about, they say something like, acceptance is the answer to all my problems. No, it's not. Sometimes faith, courage is, faith is always, it's not. But they really don't really want to get into it. It says, the central fact of our lives today, the central, you know what that means? That means the central fact. That means the only thing they think about. That means the most important deal, the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator, these people were not debating about God. These people were not standing up saying, I'm spiritual, not religious, or any of that stuff. As a matter of fact, they were religious and spiritual. Most of them went to church. They encouraged church membership. Priests, you know, I don't know where it started in A, that all of a sudden preachers and priests became a dirty word. As a matter of fact, in the 12-step, In our 12 and 12, you got the sixth step. It says a well-loved clergyman. Anybody who knows the history of AA said clergymen were all over this thing. The Bible was all over this deal. That's why they talk about the Good Samaritan and stuff. They said all of a sudden we got cool and we got well and we got into a big funnel. We didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings. And all of a sudden we watered everything down. And when you water everything down, you get a form of, as they say, a form of religion without power. All of a sudden the power leaves and people get sober and we get a lot of people in, but they're sober sucking their thumbs and they're not experiencing much of heaven. They're not being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, of which you did not even dream. The central factor of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves, which is what they say in the promises too. It says He is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And so if you're not being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, if you're not experiencing much of heaven, if God is not the central fact of your life and the only thing you think about all the time and the default position when you don't have something else in front of you, then it's just not happening for you. Then you just don't have it. Now, you can hate me, you can write New York, I'm just telling you something that's factually true. They stated what happened to them. They said, we've experienced much of heaven, we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The central fact of our life is the absolute certainty that God has entered into our hearts and lives. He has changed us, what He's done to us is miraculous. If that has not happened to you, then listen to me, this is the truth. Then it just hasn't happened for you. Then you're not getting out of this deal what they got out of this deal. Now, you can either get mad at that or mad at me, and that's fine. That's not going to get you anywhere. Or you could say, you know, that's not happening to me. I'm sober, but I don't have that. And you could say, to yourself, I want that. How do I get that? You know what I mean? How do I get that deal? Because I want that deal. If you want that deal, you can have that deal. That deal's available to you. You know, if you have the courage to go after that deal, if you don't want it, it doesn't matter what I say to you. If you want the car or this or that, it's not going to matter what I say to you. And that's the desire. That's the first step desire that I want to talk about. Because the truth of the matter is, and this is the fun, sort of like the funny thing, the guys that are already in here, not drinking, like you guys, listen to me, you're the last guys that need to hear about the first step as far as alcoholism is concerned. You know, now there may be some guy in the back, you know, that has a drinking problem, doesn't know whether he's an alcoholic or not. But you know some of the way the Lord works? Even that guy will get the first step out of this deal. Because if God is working in his heart, where he's one of the guys who's going to be the fellowship with, he'll be sitting there saying, I want this deal. He won't even know what this deal is. And you'll see him sniffing back here. You know what I mean? He won't be saying, well, he didn't say anything about booze or anything like that. He'll get this deal. You know what I mean? And the bottom line is the question on the first step is, what do you want? What do you want? You know what I mean? Because you're sober already. You already sort of like, quote, got the first step when it comes to booze. What about when it comes to everything else? What about when it comes to that stuff that I just read? That's the thing you might want to think about. So next week we'll talk about some other stuff. Thank you very much. Thank you.